Good morning. If you're visiting with us, we're grateful to have you here. We have something exciting going on next weekend. We have Zach Lee coming to start his half-week meeting with us. And he has several lessons that are specifically designed for our young folks, so we're excited to have him do that. And I thought, you know, since he's going to be talking to the kids, maybe we need to think about some things as parents and grandparents and aunts and uncles and all that kind of stuff. So that's what we're going to be doing this morning. If you would, turn over to 1 Kings chapter 2. We'll start there, and then we'll go over to Proverbs 1. 1 Kings chapter 2. Now, we're going to start this morning just briefly talking about David, and then we'll get over and start talking about Solomon. Now, you remember that David is the man after God's own heart. He's this incredible man of faith, but he's not perfect by any stretch of the imagination. He's a man that has flaws. One of the areas that we see that in, unfortunately, is in his parenting. He struggled as a parent. And some of the decisions that he made had serious ripple effects for his kids down the road. And Solomon was one of the ones who experienced some of that. You've got Rehoboam, you've just got several children that experienced that. But in 1 Kings chapter 2, as David is in the waning hours of his life, he decides to remind Solomon about priorities and keeping first things first. And we see that speech in chapter 2, starting in verse 1. When David's time to die drew near, he commanded Solomon his son, saying, "I am about to go the way of all the earth. Be strong and show yourself a man, and keep the charge of the Lord your God, walking in his ways and keeping his statutes, his commandments, his rules, and his testimonies, as it is written in the law of Moses, that you may prosper in all that you do and wherever you turn, that the Lord may establish his word that he spoke concerning me, saying, if your sons pay close attention to their way, to walk before me in faithfulness with all their heart and with all their soul, you shall not lack a man on the throne of Israel." This is a common thing. You know, if you have any advance warning, folks want to pass on some kind of final message. If you forget everything else, remember this. And that's what David is doing here. He's doing this with his son, who's going to be taking the throne over. And what he tries to emphasize is, I want you to follow God. I want you to do what God said to do, and if you do that, there are blessings associated with that. And he reminds him, if you do that, you're going to prosper in all that you do and wherever you turn. That was a promise of God. And in verse 4, he reminds him that if Solomon and his children continue doing this, then their line is going to continue as they reign over Israel. Now, we know from history, Solomon doesn't do that. That late in his life, some of the decisions that he makes, some of the ladies that he married, turned his heart away from God, and there were implications for that. And when his son became king, the nation divided. Now, before all that happened, we get Proverbs 1. If you go over to Proverbs 1, we have Solomon as a parent instructing his sons the way his father instructed him. A lot of Proverbs is Solomon speaking to his children. As you go through, especially the first 7 chapters, you see this phrase repeated, "My son, do this. My son, don't do that. My son, heed my warning and my instruction. My son." And you get that in Proverbs chapter 1. And I was reading something several years ago that just really challenged me. If you were just to read Proverbs 1 and take it at face value, you would see that Solomon is instructing his child. But you need to think about that. When you go to tell your child something, don't you have a reason for doing it? Whether you communicate the reason or not, you do. You tell your child, look both ways before you cross the street. And you start with the simple instruction, look both ways before you cross the street. And you try to drill that in, and eventually you get to the point, this is why. This is why I want you to look both ways before you cross the street. There are cars coming. It's dangerous. I want you to be safe as you cross. you don't always give the reasons at the beginning. There are some assumptions that you have. What we're going to do this morning is we go through Proverbs 1. We're going to look at the instruction that Solomon gives, but I want us to think about why he gave it. What was going through Solomon's head as he gave those instructions? What were the assumptions, the underlying principles that he had that led him to say what he said? So, before we do that, let's just break the chapter down and let's look at this. In verses 1 through 7, you have Solomon trying to communicate the importance of having reverence for God. We just talked about that last week when we were over in 1 Peter chapter 1. How important it is to keep God first and have a healthy fear and respect for God. Solomon's going to emphasize the same thing in the first 7 verses. Now his point is going to be, if you really want understanding and wisdom, it starts with having a reverence and a respect for God. And then you get to verses 8 through 19. He's going to try to prepare his son for peer pressure. It wasn't that long ago, we were driving down the car and we were listening to a radio program, a radio drama, and it was on peer pressure. So it starts with the kids. You know, this young grade school aged boy had given into peer pressure, and this is what it looked like. And then it got to the high school college age, and there was some student that had given in. And then you got to the parent of that college student, and they had given into peer pressure at work. You know, peer pressure is something that goes throughout your life, but he starts by addressing his son and preparing him for peer pressure. Then you get to the last of the chapter, verses 20 through 33. And he's trying to explain to his son what to do when he sins. Think about it like this. In verses 8 through 19, he's trying to say, don't give in to sin. Don't give in to peer pressure. But then you get to 20 and 33, and he says, but when you give in to peer pressure, this is what you ought to do. And at first glance, that might seem a little self-defeating, but we'll talk about it when we get there. So let's start by reading the first 7 verses. The Proverbs of Solomon, son of David, king of Israel. To know wisdom and instruction, to understand words of insight, to receive instruction in wise dealing, in righteousness, justice, and equity, to give prudence to the simple, knowledge and discretion to the youth. Let the wise hear and increase in learning, and the one who understands obtain guidance. To understand a proverb and a saying, the words of the wise and their riddles. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Fools despise wisdom and instruction. And that verse 7 is like the theme for Proverbs. He carries that through the book. But let's think about some things here. In verse 2, when Solomon writes, to know wisdom and instruction, do you realize about half of the time that that word is translated in English, it's translated instruction. Other times, the other half of the time, these are some of the synonyms that we see. Discipline, correction, warning, punishment. There's this connection that what he's talking about is the ability to help folks carry through and do what is right to do. That there's some weight behind the instruction. It isn't just academic. It's we're putting into practice and being held accountable for the information we're given. To know wisdom and instruction. And think about some of the folks that he says benefit from this type of wisdom. Look at verse 5. Let the wise hear and increase in learning. He's saying that mature people can increase in their wisdom and their fear of the Lord. Or verse 4, give prudence to the simple. People that don't have understanding can gain understanding. Or the end of verse 4, the youth, young people can benefit from it. The Proverbs of Solomon will make you wise no matter what age you are, what part of life you're in, no matter what stage, you'll benefit. That's pretty straightforward. So what are the assumptions here? In this first section, verses 1 through 7, I think Solomon has several things that he's trying to communicate. He's trying to communicate that man has free will, and you have a choice to make. Look at verse 7. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. He's saying, you've got a choice. You can either choose to fear God and grow in wisdom, no matter where you are or what stage of life you're in, or you can choose to reject the instruction of God. You can choose to reject a reverence for God, and you're going to be called a fool. And as you go through Proverbs, those two things are pointed out. Solomon understands that his children are going to have to make a choice throughout life. And he wants them to make the right choice. You know, that's a scary thing when you realize and accept that your children have the ability to make choices, especially as they get older. They have the ability and the right to make choices. But he also has this assumption going on, that the wise never stop learning. He wants his children to understand that no matter what stage they're in, they're always going to be maturing. And it's a really special thing when a child reaches adulthood and they realize that with their parents, they're continuing to grow and mature and become more like Jesus. That they make that transition. And Solomon has that assumption. He wants his son to get there. What he's warning him about in verse 7, is that the fool ignores instruction despite the pain he experiences. He doesn't want his son to be considered a fool. So he warns him about it. So that's just the introduction. He has these underlying assumptions that man has free will, the wise never stop learning, and he's wanting his son to avoid the pain of being a fool. And then you get to verses 8 through 19. Hear, my son, your father's instruction, and forsake not your mother's teaching, for they are a graceful garland for your head and pendants for your neck. My son, if sinners entice you, do not consent. If they say, come with us, let us lie in wait for blood, let us ambush the innocent without reason. Like Sheol, let us swallow them alive and whole like those who go down to the pit. We shall find all precious goods. We shall fill our houses with plunder. Throw in your lot among us. We will have one purse. My son, do not walk in the way with them. Hold back your foot from their paths, for their feet run to evil, and they make haste to shed blood. For in vain is a net spread in the sight of any bird. But these men lie in wait for their own blood. They set an ambush for their own lives. Such are the ways of everyone who is greedy for unjust gain. It takes away the life of its possessors. Get this very vivid picture. Several things we need to talk about here. Let's go back to verse 8. You have Solomon instructing, hear my son, your father's instruction, and forsake not your mother's teaching. What's the assumption there? That parents have a responsibility to instruct their children. It is the mother and the father's responsibility to teach their kids. To tell them about God and to explain his ways. Solomon assumes it's his responsibility to instruct his children. We need to make that same assumption. And in order to do that, hear my son, your father's instruction. You realize that ties back to verse 2? To know wisdom and instruction. This is for us as parents. Solomon assumes that these parents have humbly received instruction themselves. You want to be able to instruct your children. You want to be able to teach them what's right. You want them to have a healthy fear and respect for God. The best way that you're going to communicate that and teach that is if you are able to receive God's instruction. If you have a healthy respect for God. If you fear Him. For part of his life, Solomon did a good job with that. Not so much toward the end. But Solomon understood that he needed to be teachable. And think about some of the images that he uses to paint a picture that the son is going to value. This instruction and this teaching in verse 9 is described as a graceful garland for your head and a pendant for your neck. These pieces of jewelry that are beautiful and valuable. He assumes that the son desires to be perceived as wise. Otherwise, he wouldn't have painted it that way. He assumes that this son, to some people, wants to be perceived as wise. Do you realize that our children want to be thought of as smart to somebody? They want to be seen as valuable to somebody. And Solomon understands that. So Solomon appeals to that. Their desire to be perceived as wise. Look at verse 10. My son, if sinners entice you, do not consent. If they say, come with us, let us lie in wait for blood. Let us ambush the innocent without reason. And I read this verse once and I said, this is really extreme. I have never known of anybody to receive an invitation like this. And afterwards, after a lesson, someone came up to me and said, I have. I've had folks that said, hey, we're going to go over here and rough this guy up. You want to come? I never received that invitation. But someone else did. But simplify it. Have you ever been invited to do something really foolish? Or maybe you extended the invitation. You're the one who got the thing going to be really foolish. And you think about the promises that they make. This is going to be fun. It's going to be valuable. You're going to prosper from this. And no one is going to know. That's the point in verse 12. Like Sheol, let us swallow them alive and whole like those who go down to the pit. The idea is Sheol is the realm of the dead, the unseen realm. All of the evidence of this thing, it's all going to disappear. No one's going to know is the point. We're going to get away with it scot-free. Has anyone ever reasoned with you like that? No one's going to find out. And you think about what he challenges his son with. My son, in verse 15, don't walk in the way with them. Hold back your foot from their paths, for their feet run to evil. Look down in verses 17 and 18. In vain is a net spread in the sight of any bird, but these men lie in wait for their own blood. They want to be quick to shed blood, but they don't realize they're really setting themselves up for a fall. This is what he's trying to get his son to do, to think through the consequences of their behavior. To think through, okay, if I go with this guy who's making this invitation, what's going to happen? Never thought about that? You got these friends, and people start getting their driver's licenses. How does that kid drive? How does this kid drive? What's their reputation in the vehicle? Then they invite me to get in the car. How is that going to play out? Or there's someone that has really loose morals, and they want me to go hang out and do something with them on a certain night. How is that likely going to play out? He's trying to get him to think through the consequences of his choices. You know, chess is a game that's just amazing to me. And now you all are going to start challenging me to chess. I don't play that well. I haven't practiced. I wasn't on any kind of chess club. But I like to watch a good game, especially towards the end. Because typically, the person who wins is able to think through so many moves ahead of the person who loses. They're able to think further down the road. If I put this piece here, then they're going to put this piece here. And they think through the consequences so many moves ahead. And what Solomon is trying to challenge his son with is just that. But as far as his life goes, if I make this choice, how is that going to play out? He's trying to teach him to play the long game and not be short-sighted. That's a challenge. Especially to young people who have a hard time thinking much past, you know, the next 24 hours. He's trying to get him to think about the long-term effects of his choices. Now, those are great assumptions. I have a responsibility to instruct my child. I ought to be learning and being an example of receiving instruction. I assume that my children want to be valued and perceived as smart. And I want them to think about the consequences of their choices. That's great. But then you get to the next section, and it seems like he fights against all that. Like he might have just thrown in the towel on this instruction. Look at verse 20. Wisdom cries aloud in the street. So wisdom is personified as a woman in a public place. Wisdom cries aloud in the street. In the markets, she raises her voice. At the head of the noisy streets, she cries out. At the entrance of the city gates, she speaks. How long, O simple ones? You remember back in verse 4? To give prudence to the simple? How long, O simple ones, will you love being simple? How long will scoffers delight in their scoffing and fools hate knowledge? She's saying there are some folks that have chosen not to listen to wisdom. There are some folks that have chosen not to receive their parents' instruction. And they're choosing to stay foolish. They're exercising their free will. Look at what wisdom has to say in verse 23. If you turn at my reproof, behold, I will pour out my spirit to you. I'll make my words known to you. So you've got Solomon. He's writing this to his son. And he says, look, there's going to come a time where you're not going to make the right choice. You're going to choose, instead of being wise, you're going to choose to be foolish and simple. And when that happens, wisdom is right there begging you to come back. And the way you do that is turn at her reproof. When wisdom rebukes you, when wisdom challenges you, listen to wisdom. And there are blessings for doing that. Wisdom will pour out her spirit to you and make my words known to you. Things will make sense, and all of that is based on a respect for God. So what he's saying is, son, there are some times where you're going to exercise your free will and choose the wrong thing. And when you do, wisdom is right there. Reverence for God is right there, but you've got to turn and listen. But then look at 24, because the picture continues. Because I have called and you refused to listen, have stretched out my hand and no one has heeded. Because you have ignored all my counsel and would have none of my reproof, I also will laugh at your calamity. I will mock when terror strikes you. When terror strikes you like a storm and your calamity comes like a whirlwind, when distress and anguish come upon you, then they will call upon me, but I will not answer. They will seek me diligently, but will not find me. Because they hated knowledge. They did not choose the fear of the Lord. They would have none of my counsel, despise all my reproof. Therefore they shall eat the fruit of their way and have their fill of their own devices. For the simple are killed by their turning away, and the complacency of fools destroys them. But whoever listens to me will dwell secure and will be at ease without dread of disaster. That's not a very pleasant picture. But let's work through it. The assumption that Solomon makes is that his children will make mistakes. They will sin. They're going to make the wrong choice. And in the first four verses, the way verse 23 ends is that he holds out hope. He holds out hope for his children. That there's hope for everyone, even the simple. The hope is found in the fear of the Lord and turning from sin, responding to wisdom. That's great. But what about verses 24 through 32? What's going on there? And what wisdom is trying to say is, look, I've been reaching out to you and trying to get your attention. I've been trying to get you to turn to me. And at every opportunity, you rejected me. Every time I dialed the phone, you ignored the call. Every single time. And that at some point, the consequences of your choice will come home. In verse 26, I'll laugh at your calamity. Calamity will come. I'll mock when terror strikes you. When terror strikes you like a storm and your calamity comes like a whirlwind. When distress and anguish come upon you. Eventually, the consequences, the long-term effects of your choices will come home to roost. And at that point, in verse 28, they will call upon me, but I will not answer. They will seek me diligently, but will not find me. Verse 28 was always an interesting thing to teach in the prison in Indiana. Because you have these guys that are living through the consequences of their choices. They're in there for years, in many cases. And they're coming to a building to come to a Bible study to try to respond to the gospel. They're trying to turn. And in verse 29, it seems like God is mocking them and that there's no benefit in turning to God. But that's not what Solomon is saying. What Solomon is saying when he's talking about wisdom, he's talking about a life lived skillfully and the blessings that come along with living a life lived skillfully. And on the flip side, he's talking about the consequences of ignoring God and all of those consequences that come with it. And at some point, if you've lived decade after decade ignoring God and ignoring His wisdom, no reverence for Him, guess what? There are earthly consequences that come along to that. Now, can I turn? Absolutely. There's hope. There's hope in this chapter. But just because I turn doesn't mean the consequences are removed. The consequences remain. Spiritually, I can be made whole and I can be reconciled to my God and my sins can be atoned for. And that's what we pray for and that's what we preach through the gospel of Jesus. But there are some life choices that stick. You think about that chess game. And you're playing against someone that is just heads and shoulders above you skill-wise, and you make some critical mistakes early on, you may turn that around a little, but you're going to lose the game. That's just the way it works. There's some consequences to our decisions here that you can't undo. There's a phrase, you can't unring that bell. Because they hated knowledge and did not choose the fear of the Lord, would have none of my counsel and despised all my reproof. Therefore they shall eat the fruit of their way and have their fill of their own devices. He's trying to say that some consequences are permanent. And if we don't turn soon enough, not even wisdom will deliver us from those consequences. I know of a young woman who was so sweet, and she is so sweet, and she has shared this with a lot of people back home. Got great grades going through school. And her senior year, snuck out of the house to go to one party. One party. She had never touched alcohol in her entire life and had one drink. And after that one drink, at that one party that she snuck out to go to, came home pregnant and she didn't know who it was. And she kept that baby and loved on that baby, and he is the sweetest young man. But you can't undo that. You can't undo that. There are some of the guys in the prison that did some things that they don't even remember, but they're living out the consequences, and their family they're experiencing the consequences of those decisions. You can be forgiven and you can be atoned. You can be made whole spiritually, but there are some things you can't undo. And what Solomon is trying to communicate to his children as he goes down through this is, before some of those physical, earthly consequences kick in, turn, in verse 23, turn at the reproof of wisdom. While it will still do you some good. You know, you've seen this played out. You probably played this out as you were growing up, where you did something that you weren't supposed to do, and you thought your parents didn't know about it. But they really did know. And they came along and said, "So, what did you do today?" And they gave you the opportunity to be honest. And you thought, "Well, do they know? Do they not know?" And so you played the game, "I'm going to assume that they still don't know." So you lied. And they give you another opportunity. And you're like, I'm not sure. And so you continue the deception. And they give you opportunity after opportunity to come out with it. And finally, they just lower the boom and say, "Look, I've known. And I was giving you chance after chance. Now, I'll forgive you, but now these are the consequences." That's what Solomon is trying to communicate. There's an excellent book for singles considering how to consider a spouse, what to look for in a spouse, how to use your singleness for God. And in that, there's a true life story this gentleman had written in as a judge. And he was trying a case where there was a meth addict involved. And the meth addict had come before the judge so many times before, and this was her last chance, and she had been convicted again of meth. and she was experiencing liver failure. The young woman was in her 20s. And she was sentenced to jail because of what she had done. And she started crying and pleading with the judge, saying, if you send me to jail, I'm going to die in jail. I'm not going to get the health care that I need, all these other things. And the judge responded, I know, and I'm sorry. But you're now in the hands of the sheriff to begin serving out your sentence. Which killed the judge, because he was raising his grandchild, because his child and spouse, that child's spouse, were also addicted to meth and out doing something. And it wasn't that he wasn't sympathetic, he was. But they were living out the consequences of rejecting God and rejecting wisdom and rejecting Christ, and there was nothing that he could do about that. Now those are just earthly consequences. All those examples that we just rattled through are all just earthly consequences. We need to think about the really long game and about the spiritual, eternal consequences. Now, there's part of this chapter that when you start thinking about Solomon's assumptions are scary as a parent. It's scary to think about your child having free will. It's scary to think about your child choosing. It's scary to accept the fact that our children will sin. Despite the instruction and the encouragement, your child and my child will choose to sin, commit iniquity, trespass. They're going to sin against God. They're going to choose the wrong thing. That's not giving permission. That's not encouraging them to do it. It's simply stating a fact of living here. They're going to make that choice because the only sinless one is Jesus. And so we need to be thinking about, how am I going to prepare my child for when they sin? We need to start thinking about that. Years ago, when Kenan was first born, it's like, I'm gonna raise him right, perfect child, blah, blah, blah. He's awesome. I love him. But I would come home from studying with some folks that were making a mess of their life, and there was a part of me as I walked in the door where I wanted to turn to him and say, don't you ever do whatever. And then I got to the point after studying through this and some other things where I thought, you know, that's not fair and that's not right. Instead, I need to walk in the door and say, I pray to God that you never. But if you do, if you sin, tell me about it. Because we need to take care of it. And there's a God who can take care of it. And there's a Jesus who can take. You are going to. This is not permission and I'm not encouraging. It's just stating a fact. They need to know where to go when they sin. And I appreciate Solomon helping us think through that. That when they sin, they need to turn and listen to wisdom. You realize, let's start wrapping up. Do you realize that there was only ever one perfect son? Only one. And that was Jesus. That on a couple different occasions, God communicated that. The transfiguration in Matthew chapter 17. Where Jesus turns so bright and light and starts interacting with a couple of Old Testament saints. And as Peter kind of stumbles around about how to prolong this experience, God speaks. And he says in verse 5, this is my beloved son with whom I am well pleased. Listen to him. There is only one perfect son, and that's Jesus. And his sinless perfection qualified him to become our sacrifice to atone for our imperfection, for our sin. And God calls on us to pay attention to that son and to listen to that son. If you're here this morning and you've been convicted that you're not a perfect child, because you're not a perfect child, all of us first siblings think we are. You're not. We think we broke the mold. We didn't. We need to acknowledge our sin and seek the salvation that can only be found in Jesus. And if we're already a Christian, then we need to think about whether we've been following through with responding to wisdom, or if wisdom's been calling to us and we've been rejecting her. And as parents, we need to be thinking through, how am I going to communicate some of these things to my children? What are your assumptions for your kids? Because if it's sinless perfection, you and your child are going to be sorely disappointed, and there's going to be a lot of frustration. Or you can help teach them what it means to seek forgiveness and to turn to God and to repent. If there's some need that you have this morning to either become a Christian, to confess some sin and seek encouragement, whether it's parenting or as a child, we'd encourage you to let us know what that need is while we stand and sing the song that's been selected for us.